everybody, and thank you for joining me for this podcast all about the consequences of liver damage. Now, to be able to fully appreciate what I'm talking about, I think it's important to first discuss why the liver is such a crucial organ. It's the largest organ in the human body by mass. It weighs about 1.5 kilos and it contains about 10% of the total blood of a person. 1.5 liters of blood is pumped through the liver every minute, and that rich blood supply gives the liver its dark reddish brown colour. Now, as I said, we need to look at the functions of the liver just briefly. I will record a more detailed podcast about the functions of the liver at a later date. But as I said, we need to understand what the liver does before we can appreciate what happens when it's damaged. A human liver is estimated to carry out, it's thought to be over 500 different functions in the body. If the liver is damaged, it can regrow parts of itself. It has regenerative capabilities. However, if the damage is too extensive, we normally say about more than 2/3 worth of the liver, then those cells will not regenerate and the patient may not survive. Unlike the kidneys, which are simply filtering units, a working artificial replacement liver has yet to be developed. The liver is located in the upper right part of the abdomen. It lies, in fact, just beneath the diaphragm, and it's held in position by connective tissues called ligaments and mesenteries. The liver is roughly triangular in shape, and it's made up of sections that you may have heard of called lobes. The blood supply of the liver is also quite unusual. I think there's something interesting to add. It's actually got two vessels supplying it with blood, but only one vessel draining it. So each blood vessel actually has a different role. The aorta is the main artery of the body, and it carries oxygenated blood under high pressure to the liver through then the hepatic artery, which branches off the aorta. It supplies the liver with oxygenated blood. The hepatic portal vein carries nutrients that have been absorbed from the small intestine, and these nutrients are carried to the liver for processing. The hepatic vein drains the liver. This vein carries deoxygenated blood and products from the liver, ultimately to the inferior vena cava, the main vein of the body. So blood from the hepatic vein flows into the vena cava, and from there the blood is returned then to the heart. It's a really interesting blood supply. The liver is an intricate and complex network of blood vessels, bile canals and liver cells called hepatocytes. When viewed with a microscope, simple just optical microscope, liver tissue can be seen to be made up of these three-dimensional blocks called lobules, and the lobules are held together by connective tissue. In cross-section, if we look at it in cross-section, a lobule is shaped a bit like, I guess you could say, a polygon. Each lobule is only about 1 millimetre in diameter. And at the centre of each lobule, there's a blood vessel, which is a branch of that hepatic vein. This is called the central vein. Now, around the edges of the lobules are portal areas or portal triads. And within each portal area, there are three vessels: a branch of the hepatic artery, a branch of the hepatic portal vein, and also a branch of the bile duct. Individual liver cells, as I said earlier, are called hepatocytes. They're simple cuboidal cells with surface microvilli. Microvilli, you might be familiar with that term, are designed to increase the surface area. Hepatocytes are arranged in, I guess we say, long chains. The chains of cells are stacked on other chains of cells, and these blocks of hepatocytes are arranged around blood-filled channels called sinusoids. Every hepatocyte is next to a blood supply. That's really important. Tiny canals also run horizontally and vertically between the hepatocytes. These transport the bile that is made by the hepatocytes, and these are called bile canaliculi. They eventually link up with the bile ducts in these portal triads that I've mentioned. Bile in the canaliculi and the blood in the sinusoids are kept separate from one another. They also flow in opposite directions, a sort of counter-current flow, if you like. The bile is then channeled towards the gallbladder, and that's where we actually store the bile. Now, I said a couple of minutes ago that the liver is thought to carry out over 500 functions. Just in this podcast, just for ease, we can group them together. So there's things like metabolic function, so the control of blood glucose levels. I mean, that's a whole podcast in itself. Processing fats into lipoproteins, the deamination, so the removal of the amine group from amino acids. There's synthesis of key proteins, so things like albumin, globulins, blood clotting proteins like fibrinogen, the non-essential amino acids, and binding iron and copper to proteins. Then there's storage. So here we're talking about glycogen, iron and other metals and fat-soluble vitamins. The liver's involved in synthesis, so things like bile, as I've mentioned, cholesterol, bile pigments and enzymes. And I've recorded very recently, in fact, a podcast about the use of statins. So widespread use, but controversial use. And I mentioned a little bit about that there. And then detoxification. I think that's what most people associate the liver with, detoxification of things like hormones, of drugs, and ammonia to a chemical called urea. So now that we've really set the scene and spoken about the jobs that the liver does quite generally and the kind of appearance, the structure, the macro and microscopic structure of the liver, we can now really begin to appreciate what happens when we damage it. Because the liver carries out so many essential functions, any problems with this organ can have a major impact on health. And there are many different causes of liver damage. So the first I'd like to mention is something called cirrhosis. Now, when the liver is badly damaged, it tries to repair itself. If those hepatocytes can't be regenerated, the liver replaces the damaged cells with what's called scar tissue. Scar tissue does not carry out the same functions as those liver cells. Cirrhosis is the disease that results when the liver increases in size because of the buildup of that scar tissue. And damage caused by cirrhosis cannot be repaired. Now, there are several causes of cirrhosis, but the main ones are, and you may be aware of these, alcohol abuse. That certainly, and when I've taught this in lessons, a number of students would often say alcohol abuse is like the top answer, if you like. But there are other causes. Chronic hepatitis, hepatitis being inflammation of the liver, but also a fatty liver can cause cirrhosis. Then there's fatty liver disease, and that I'd like to mention next. Now, this is a disease that develops when the body creates too much fat. The excess fat is stored in the liver cells. So fatty liver disease may be actually a genetic or a side effect of diabetes. The most common cause, though, is alcoholism. Alcoholic drinks contain ethanol. Now, in the liver, ethanol is detoxified using the enzyme ethanol dehydrogenase. That enzyme removes hydrogen atoms from the ethanol to create ethanol. The hydrogen atoms are taken up by something called NAD, which becomes reduced. Now, large quantities of reduced NAD get created. So ultimately, what we have is ethanol, and then via ethanol dehydrogenase enzyme and the reduction of NAD, we end up with ethanol. Now, as the reduced NAD accumulates, there's therefore less available for other essential reactions. The ethanol is taken up by the mitochondria in those hepatocytes. The ethanol is then oxidized to something called acetate, which can be converted to fatty acids and fats. I mentioned a few minutes ago hepatitis, and that's something I'd like to focus on in this podcast as well. Hepatitis is a disease that causes inflammation of the liver, and there are several different forms of hepatitis. Hepatitis A is caused by a virus. It's common in countries where sanitation typically is poor. It can be caught by drinking water or eating food contaminated with the feces or fecal material, if you like, of an infected person. Vaccinations are available, though, against that disease, and the vaccination should be given to anyone who is at risk of contracting that virus. So those would include things like healthcare workers and holidaymakers who visit third world destinations. Hepatitis B is also caused by a virus. This virus is spread through contact with the blood of an infected person. Chronic hepatitis B can lead to cirrhosis, but also, and unfortunately, liver cancer. but there is a vaccine against hepatitis B, thankfully. Hepatitis C is also a blood-borne virus. It's spread through sharing needles, and there is no vaccine available yet, but it can be treated with antiviral drugs. And I alluded to it just a few moments ago, but cancer is clearly a major consequence of liver damage. Cancer of the liver can be caused by alcohol abuse, it can be caused by hepatitis infections, or something called hemochromatosis. Now, hemochromatosis develops when iron levels in the body build up over the years. Primary liver cancer is where a tumour develops in the liver itself, but that is, thankfully, quite rare. Secondary liver cancer is caused by a tumour which has spread or metastasised from another part of the body, and that's not so rare, unfortunately. Liver damage can also result from ammonia buildup. So proteins can't be stored in the body. Proteins get broken down into their sort of like monomers, their simpler components, or amino acids. Now, excess amino acids are converted into ammonia and then urea in the liver. The liver contains the enzymes that carry out these processes. The stages are called the ornithine cycle. If liver cells are damaged, then the levels of ammonia in the body increase, and high levels of ammonium ions in the blood affect brain function. That can lead to, as you might suspect, confusion, brain damage, and death. So a low protein diet here and medical treatment would help. Drugs is something I'd also like to mention in this podcast at this point in time, because one of the key roles of the liver is to detoxify harmful chemicals. And many drugs, when they're taken into the body and metabolized, actually end up changing the way that the liver even functions. Some do damage it. So for example, statins, which, and I said I've recorded a podcast recently on the use of statins, help to reduce blood cholesterol levels. But they sometimes increase the levels of liver enzymes, and it may be advisable for patients who are on them to actually stop taking them altogether. Certain medicinal herbs contain substances like pyrrolizidine alkaloids, as they're properly termed, which can damage the liver gradually if taken over long periods of time. They may block the hepatic veins and stop blood flowing out of the liver itself. How do we then go about detecting liver problems? So I've listed a whole range of conditions that can damage the liver, but how do we actually know that that has occurred? Well, liver disease can show itself in many different ways. Some symptoms are just very general. So they include things like fatigue, loss of appetite, and weight loss. Now, as you know, I mean, they really are quite general symptoms. They can, the differential diagnosis there could be one of a number, myriad of different things. But these vague symptoms mean that liver disease is often undiscovered in the early stages. The symptoms that are much more serious include things like jaundice, which is a yellowing of the skin and whiting or white of the eyes. It's caused by bile leaking out of the liver into the blood, and many liver problems result in jaundice. There's something also called cholestasis. Now, that's reduced flow of bile. Bile is essential for the digestion of fats. An enlarged liver usually is one of the kind of telltale signs, if you like, and fluid in the abdomen that will cause swelling. Doctors carry out what are called liver function tests. So they're just simple blood tests that will measure the level of enzymes and other substances produced by the liver. And the level of the different substances can indicate quite quickly how well that liver is working. So if we do have a damaged liver, how do we go about treating it? Can we repair it? Is it treatable? Well, if a patient is taking a drug like a statin, they will simply undergo regular blood tests. That blood is checked for the presence of liver enzymes, and those tests will detect problems early on and help to prevent liver damage. So often, as I said before, often stopping a drug will simply result in recovery. For example, an alcoholic who stops drinking alcohol can usually recover quite well. Sometimes a drug is actually used to treat liver damage. So if a person has taken a drug overdose, an antidote may be given. However, very few drugs do have a working antidote. For severe liver damage, a liver transplant may be the only real valid solution. So this is when a human liver is transferred into the body of another person, quite simply. But there are three types of liver transplant that often people aren't necessarily aware of. Now, the most common liver transplant is when a complete liver is taken from a recently dead donor and transferred to the patient. But a close family member can actually donate the left or the right lobe of their own liver. And that's possible because the liver has the ability to, as I said earlier, regenerate. It is usual that both the donated liver and the donor's liver will have grown to their normal size in about 3 months. But there is a third type of transplant. Now, if an adult and a child both need a transplant, a donated liver can actually be split. So the child would receive the smaller left lobe and the adult would receive the slightly larger right lobe. Artificial livers, however, though, can be used. Now, there is a well-documented shortage of organs for transplantation, and the ideal answer would be to create an artificial one. Now, scientists around the world are already trialing new techniques. A group of scientists in China have changed skin cells so that they have the properties of liver cells. These modified cells have been used to create a sort of bio-artificial liver, or BAL as it's known. The patient's blood is passed through the BAL, and the artificial liver cells will detoxify and clean the blood before it's passed back into the patient, so carrying out the normal function of the liver. These artificial liver cells have shown an 80% survival rate for pigs with acute liver failure. Human trials have now started and the results are looking positive. An artificial liver has also been developed in Germany. This removes toxic materials from the blood, and the patient's blood again is passed through a filter. The blood here is mixed with a sticky protein called albumin, and toxins stick to the albumin molecules, and that treatment is also in its relatively early stages. More experiments need to be undertaken before these kind of treatments do become widely available. So just at this point in the podcast, I want to say a big thank you to everybody for listening. It's just a kind of short overview, if you like, of the consequences of liver damage. But to be able to, as I said, fully appreciate the damage that we do to our livers, we need to really appreciate how critical they are to a number of bodily metabolic functions. So again, thank you for listening. And I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Curriculum Press, for providing content for me to use in this particular podcast. As always, and I say this at the end of each podcast, do get in touch if you have any further questions. Just drop me a line at kytosbiology@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, everyone.